Hey, welcome to the Happy Rant Podcast. I am Ted Kluck, joined as always in studio by my good friends and my partners in radio, Barnabas Piper and Ron Martin. Boys, this is our first recording sesh of a new year. We have new business ventures that we were just talking about off the air. But Piper, one old business partnership that we still feel in love with. We still feel like it's the first day together is Dwell Bible. Pipe, tell us about Dwell.
Listeners, it's kind of the perfect time of year to check Dwell out, because this is the time of year when everybody is, you know, both motivated and, you know, has residual guilt from their not finishing their Bible reading plans previously. So Dwell is an audio Bible app. If you go to dwellapp.io/happyrant, you can see there's a discount for our listeners. But just a couple of the things that they lay out to help people get into the scriptures, particularly at the beginning of the year. They have what is called a Dwell Daily plan. So that's 365 days of listening to get you through the Bible in a year. They have listening plans, which can walk you through different portions of scripture or different thematic things. They have a read-along option where you can, it's almost like a karaoke lyrics where you can just read the scrolling words of scripture as you listen. They're working on a children's Bible feature. So you can go explore all that. I don't need to get into all of it. Multiple narrators, multiple Bible versions. But again, go to dwellapp.io/happyrant. You can see they have a 30% discount off of the lifetime subscription and a 10% discount off the annual subscription. It's very affordable. You can also give it as a gift. If you know somebody who would enjoy it, you can buy it and give it to somebody else as well. So go check that out.
Beauty. Great job, Pipe. We're doing a live show this spring too, aren't we? Is that a...
We are. Details are in the works. Ronnie, any updates on that?
Details coming.
Details forthcoming.
Forthcoming. Yeah, working on it.
It's going to be huge.
What we can say is that it will be in conjunction with the last Together for the Gospel. So for those of you who are planning to attend that or who are in the greater Louisville area, it'll be in conjunction with that. We usually do it on the front end, so right before that conference starts. Yeah. So plan accordingly. We'll roll out details hopefully shortly.
We're competing with that other organization to book the Yum Center. So we hope to get, I think, a good response from the Yum Center here any minute. And if that falls through, we will hold our event somewhere else. But yeah, looking forward to it, boys. We got two things to talk about today, and they're both funny. So I'm just going to dive into the first one by reading the text that Piper sent to the show group chat. Here it is. Another topic idea. How the heck did Chip and Joanna Gaines become a whole lifestyle? As my wife says, it's no longer keeping up with the Joneses. It's keeping up with the Gaineses. Chip and Joanna Gaines, entire lifestyle. I don't have a lot of experience with the Gaineses, except that, like, from time to time, I'll go into, like, a Michaels or a Hobby Lobby with my wife. And, like, they have a little kind of streamlined book rack. And in the streamlined book rack, it's almost entirely full of books by the Gaineses and Tim Tebow. Like, this is the reading wheelhouse that's, like, being promoted by...
Baby, I can't wait till they feature our book at Hobby Lobby beginning this August. Yeah,
I'm sure there's space. Yeah, I'm sure there's going
to
be space.
They're going to have to make space is what I think they're saying. Yeah,
it's going
to
be a third way. You know, the Gaineses, Tim Tebow, and the new Happy Rant essay collection. So my question to you guys is this. Like, in thinking about the Gaineses, just kind of this hot, slightly older, kind of aspirational couple. Like, in previous generations, were there sort of aspirational people like this where they're not really famous for anything normal, right? Like, they're not movie stars, they're not rock stars, they're not sports stars. They're just sort of aspirational people. Is this a thing that happened in other generations? And if so, who were they? Pipe, weigh in on that first, if you would.
Yeah, I was thinking about the same thing, kind of trying to think about this by, like, celebrities by generation. And I feel like this is the they're sort of, you know how, like, Steve Jobs and Bill Gates kind of came along at the perfect time for the computing revolution, the personal computing revolution. The Gaineses came along for, like, fame revolution.
Yeah.
They were the original influencers, mm-hmm. where in previous generations, I felt like glamour was the thing.
Yeah.
You know, there was Hollywood celebrities. There was athletes in, you know, long fur coats, and they were sort of, the celebrities were other than us.
Yes. Yeah.
And the Gaineses got famous for being better at everyday life than all of us.
Well, yeah. And selling products whose implicit promise is you can be like us, like buy this set of plates or buy this wallpaper and you'll be 4% closer to being like us.
You can have your very own Magnolia in, like, I don't know, suburban New Jersey or something.
Yeah, which is a really weird business model, but it kind of makes sense based on how, like, stuff is done nowadays. And so I want to ask Ronnie this. Pipe, you and I both live in Tennessee, so we're both kind of in the Gainesified Mid-South, where a certain percentage of their approach is, like, quote unquote Christianity, and I'm definitely air quoting Christianity. Ronnie lives in Ohio. Baby, what level of influence does the Gaines thing have up by you? Like, are they in your Michael's book racks when you go to places like that?
Oh yeah, no, absolutes. I mean, I don't think it's cross colonization, right?
Okay.
They're Americana now.
Okay.
You know what I mean, the games are just, they're part and parcel with American culture. I think if you want to go back, you really could see the way, like, Martha Stewart kind of spearheaded this culture, this movement.
Oh yeah, that's an interesting one. And, yeah, I'd forgotten that.
And I think the cement that Martha Stewart laid as a foundation, the Gaines, you know, years later. Again, with HDTV, with podcasting, with the ability to create a brand that, like, that can permeate the culture even more, with even more influence than Martha Stewart ever had, and be a little bit younger, and be a little more fluid, and kind of have and kind of really, like, dive into evangelicalism with it by just having a super positive message, everything squeaky clean, and even on top of that. You know, even the way that they brand, you know, and the way they're able to get into wherever anybody's at, right? So whoever you are, whatever your budget, whatever your, you know, whatever your religious, whatever your cultural leanings, like, there's something that Magnolia has for you to beautify your life, but we're simple. And we're just salt of the earth, and we're beautiful people, but we're not that beautiful, and we're relatable. And you can have a piece of this. You can feel like you're part of the Magnolia home. Martha Stewart kind of lacked that. Martha Stewart was kind of promoted as a celebrity, whereas the Gaines in the current way that we promote people and make everybody feel like they're part of the project, the Gaines really fulfill that promise, I think. But I think it was spearheaded by Martha, you know.
That's a fascinating take.
Didn't they get big off of, like, one of those, like, do it yourself home renovation?
Yeah, Fixer Upper.
Like, I think you said HGTV earlier.
Yeah, Fixer Upper was the show. So that's all it was. They just started with some. I mean, man, there's been a million of these shows. Some of them kind of hit. Most of them don't hit.
Yeah,
and they just had this show with this concept that absolutely hit. But I think it was because of Chip and Joanna, their personalities together. It wasn't really so much about the house and the fixing up of the house as it was the way that they interact together as a couple. And I mean, again, that's just, they were just their own actors. They just became their own celebrities based on their personalities at the end of the day.
Have either of you guys watched the program, like the original program that they got famous for?
I've seen a couple of seasons. Yeah.
How would you describe, like, and I haven't watched it, so I'm learning this through you now. How would you describe, like, their interaction with each other? Because I'm interested in this, and this is, I think, a 2022 thing, right? I think we're just still in the middle of this being a thing. I'm interested in what it looks like when someone's, like, selling their marriage as the product. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, typically our marriages tend to be kind of ours, you know? It's a thing that I enjoy with my wife. It's not a thing that I'm leveraging per se. But when your marriage is the product, or your family is the product, what does that look like? Does it, in watching the show, did it feel gross to you? Did it feel normal?
No.
I
think, you know, it's weird because I think it's such a great question, T. I think the brilliance in it is that their dynamic is so – whether it is or not, it feels so believable, right?
Okay.
So again, they didn't really gloss it up. So you got mm-hmm. you got Joanna Gaines, who is more of this, like, she's on the laptop, she's the interior designer, she's the architect. And then yeah. you got Chip, who is the guy that comes from like a construction, he builds the houses, he does the demos,
yeah.
and he does all the manual labor. So you have this partnership. And then in the midst of all the technical details, what you have are two people where you have Joanna, who has a really great sense of humor and kind of does the, I have the crazy husband who's joking around all the time, who's never serious, but gets the work done. And I'm doing all the eye roll stuff, but I love him because he's cute and he's so darling and he actually really loves me and cares for me. But uh-huh. they never do anything in kind of a, in sort of that like overly syrupy kind of gross way. It kind of, they're there to do a job and they do it with a level of interaction that looks believable, but also looks, you know, kind-hearted, and it looks like they love each other. They support each other. And so it's almost like something you can't make up in a way. And it's something where, you know, the dude's he's not all glossed. He's not all glossed out. And she kind of isn't either in some ways. So they make sure that they're believable in terms of what they're wearing and how they're functioning.
And, dude, I actually came up with the analog for this in Another Generation as you were talking. It was Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz.
Dude, I mean, that's probably a good
analogy. Like, basically, we're a married couple in real life. We have a show in which we're a married couple. We're like a better, more functional version of what we are in real life. And we're selling it. And that's the product, right? The product is, what does our family's life look like together? And the televised version is not all that different from the real version. It's just better.
And it's not like, oh, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, they divorced, like Lucille Ball filed for divorce the day after their show ended, which is fascinating and kind of dark. But what were you going to say, baby?
Well, because it's like you could kind of look at the Gaines, right? And you could go, well, would they exist without the Kardashians in a sense?
Yeah.
But it's different than the Kardashians because, again, they're not quite as beautiful. Yeah. And they're not – and again, where the Kardashians are kind of showing all of the scandal and all of the super dysfunctionality, like the Gaines don't tip over into either of those things. They're not saying everything's the greatest thing that ever was.
Yeah.
But they're also not showing you, you know, sort of the underbelly of any sort of sense of dysfunction that exists maybe in their relationship. Well, so it's this really weird,
and they're not doing the sort of unattainable wealth thing. Like, what I think one of the greatest appeals to them is when you watch them, you're like, oh, I dress like that. Like,
absolutely.
That guy wears flannels and ball caps and jeans, not, you know, $4,000 suits just to sit around the house or something. You know, there's the point of the Kardashians is you can get a peek behind the curtain of a life you can
absolutely
never have.
100%.
Yeah.
And the Gaineses are like the opposite of that. They're like, there are no curtains. Look, this is, you know, with a little bit of hustle and a little bit of charm, you too can be just like,
well, you know, it's so funny. That's so true, Pipe. And it's like, I have friends that have, you know, been in Texas on vacation. They've gone to Magnolia. Gaines have been hanging around. They've sent me photos that they took with Gaines. And, you know, they've had 10-minute conversations with them. And they go, you know, again, it's all perspective, right? But it's like, dude, I swear they were exactly like they were on the show. Chip was crazy. He was super funny. He asked me a bunch of questions. Now, again, I mean, that's, you know, you can't take that to the bank, right? But at the same time, even their public persona, they're accessible. People can get to them, and they haven't put themselves on a pedestal where it's like, oh man, you know, it's like, I'm never going to meet Bono and I'm never going to meet Chip and Joanna Gaines. You know, they haven't put themselves on that pedestal or gotten to that level. Maybe they will someday, but they're so accessible. And I think that's the word for me with them. And it's why people love them, because they feel like, hey, if I live next door to them, and by the way, I might be able to, we'd probably be best friends. And that's what you kind of want to. That's relatable. You kind of want to know that and see that.
Piper, my question to you is, and you've been listening for a long time, so if there's other aspects that you want to talk about, then by all means do it. But I wonder if there will ever be like a Christian Chip and Joanna Gaines. I mean, maybe they are the Christian Chip and Joanna Gaines, but what I mean by that is like a a ministry, Chip and Joanna Gaines. This couple that like platforms themselves.
Oh, you mean like real marriage?
What's real marriage? I live under a rock.
That's Mark and Grace
Driscoll. Oh, okay. Yeah. But you know what I mean though? Like a pastor who's like the right age. So maybe he's like 38 or like 41 or whatever. And the right amount of hot, his wife's the right amount of hot. And they begin to sort of, do this thing. I feel like that's going to happen.
I don't think it'll work the same way in ministry circles because you have different like angry divisions. Huh. And there's a huge chunk of the church that if the wife is involved,
yeah,
they're out.
Yeah.
You know, like if the husband and the wife are co-sponsoring, co-leading, co-teaching anything, they're just out. They're like, I don't want to hear from her.
You know,
that's not, you know, no women on stage kind of thing.
Well, I mean, it would never work in any tribe in which there's any level of thoughtfulness. So it'd have to be, yeah.
Or like just sort of staunch rigidity. They, you know, somebody's going to be like, they're not Calvinist enough, so I'm not going to listen to them, even though they're really, you know, kind and gracious and probably have enough, a fair amount to offer us. Mm. I think probably within certain denominations, there probably are these kinds of couples, you know, husbands and wives are sort of looked to. The other weird thing in the church world is like people aren't looking to the Gaineses explicitly for like how to live life as much as they are sort of like they're inspiring, they're fun. Yeah. We could be buds.
It's positivity is all it's Whereas, turned into all positivity.
Yeah. And then people look at ministry leaders and like that turns into, you know, as we've seen sort of a weird idolatry type of thing, yeah, where people just sort of thoughtlessly follow. Like it's, I'm not sure setting people up for that sort of fame in the ministry world is ever a good thing. And I don't think it'll work.
Oh yeah. It'd be so terrible for sure.
the best bet is somebody who becomes sort of next generation of Gaineses who is a committed Christian. And honestly, I don't know anything about their faith. They may be, somebody's probably going to email us and be like, they're wonderful Christian.
No, Gaineses are the Christian version of what you're talking about. They are.
Okay. Yeah. There's just where you just sort of, you sort of get the infusion of values into everyday life.
Yeah.
I mean, it's exactly what it is.
That's kind of our best.
But you know, it's funny, like when you read, cause we get their magazine, right? They have a magazine, which is actually pretty good. And, but when you get it, it's what it's turned into, which is what it has to turn into is, I mean, they do have a faith. But again, man, anything that we would say could potentially be a polarizing comment or something that would push a particular people group and make them feel like they're not, you know, it's, you know, they're not being inclusive enough, you know, all of those things. It's really like when you read the magazine, it's fascinating because they write articles and they have all these quotes. And again, they're not bad. Some of them are really good, actually. And they're really thoughtful and they're not positive to the point where they ignore real life or pain or any of that. Right. So it's very thoughtful, but none of it, you're not going to see anything that's going, I mean, it takes a very like narrow path right through the middle of anything that could potentially be offensive. So, I mean, they're not necessarily saying the Lord Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Because they probably have a large
following. They're using the word faith.
Like they're using the word faith.
You have to have faith.
Right.
Absolutely. You know, lean on your faith.
100%.
Yeah. They've probably got like some, you know, 28-year-old in their office giving it a scrub for, you know, whatever the current social issues are. And I mean, it is masterful. They've succeeded at being public white people for 15 years now. That's remarkable. That's a really great run.
And they're not in trouble. They haven't gotten in trouble. I think there was some financial stuff that popped up a couple years ago. But I think other than that, they're obviously, man, they got some good PR people because they never say anything wrong.
Yeah, it's a magnificent PR job. Now, here's a question. We don't want to go down this road probably, but maybe just for a minute. You know how to say this? Like a year ago, there was the expectation that if you were any kind of a public person, you were weighing in on a couple of social issues. And
I was just about to ask.
Yeah,
similar. So I'm glad.
If you didn't weigh in on it, maybe you were the worst. If you did weigh in on it, maybe you were the worst. If you weighed in on it in the wrong way, you were the worst. What? How did they handle that? Pipe, do you have any insight on, like, you know, and it's not like anybody's sitting around waiting for the Gaines's statement on, like, Black Lives Matter or whatever, but, like, how did they handle that?
I don't know how they, Ronnie probably has a better idea of how they handle it. My impression, and I think this is how they have kind of survived spotlessly, is that they understand really well how to stay in their lane.
Yeah, that's a good word.
Their lane is, you know, it's lifestyle. It's, you know, it's, there's sort of, it's home life kind of stuff. Like, mm-hmm. They're not spokespersons for any movement on any side of political or controversial issue. And I think they probably also, I don't know if they have PR people or I'm sure they have PR people, but, or if they just have a real keen sense of, like, yeah, the moment we get near that, we lose a portion of our customer base. Yeah. You know, they've got a bunch of, bunch of, like, 60-year-old Republican ladies who love their stuff.
Yeah.
And then they've got young, progressive leaning moms who love their stuff. They're like, we touch this, we're losing money.
They're like Michael Jordan. We're just, you know, Republicans buy shoes too. And
so here's some shiplap and a smile and off we go.
Yeah. Nah, that's brilliant. You know, I mean, if what you want to do is sell shiplap, it's pretty brilliant.
It's what I wish every other brand would have done for the last 3 years.
Well, yeah.
Like, you know,
I was going to go there.
Why do we need Under Armour or Nike or whoever to speak into political issues? Like, I just want shoes, man.
I just want shiplap. I just wish we sold shiplap.
I wish we did too.
I wish we were just a shiplap company. I don't know why we're doing podcasts. We should be selling shiplap.
Why aren't we one? Why don't we have a, we should have a Happy Rant shiplap. I bet Josh I know Josh listens to the program, which is what I like about him as a merch partner. He's also a listener. He was a listener first. Josh, if you're listening, and I know you are, like, let's get on a shiplap design. And I've viewed the prices on our website. They're not cheap. Okay. So that's going to be some higher end shiplap. Like, you're going to have to open the checkbook for it.
100%.
Well, it's because it's high quality stuff.
It's going to be worth it.
We're going to do shiplap. Like, yeah, let's do it worth buying.
This isn't junk.
Hey, can we do a second on the etymology of shiplap? Was it, like, used in ships? I because, you know, I like nautical wharf stuff, and I can't believe I've never put this together now. Like, how was it used originally in ships? Do you know this, baby?
Baby, I have no clue, but that sounds potentially like the funniest thing I've ever heard.
Like, could you make a ship out of it?
I mean, I want this app to be called, like, Shiplaps, how we used to make ships.
Yeah, etymology of shiplap. Maybe that's the title. But I'm just interested in that. But
I have no idea. I just know that, you know, we're getting ready to do all this rebuilding at our church, and that's all we're going to be using. But you know what? Maybe now we're going to be ordering it from the Happy Ranch Shiplap Company.
I hope so. I mean, new year, new project.
Maybe we could just partner with Chip and Joanna Gaines and just kind of, you know, we could give them a boost. They could use it. They don't have the largely Caucasian reformed audience.
Oh, and I'm sure they
on lock.
I'm sure they never get any requests. They need for partnership ever. I'm sure.
Maybe.
I'm sure
maybe
nobody wants to do anything with them ever.
Maybe they could get us that coveted shelf space in the little book rack at Michael's.
Baby, do you think they'd appreciate a couple of high class guys like us trying to move in on their shiplap industry?
I think they might. I think it might be time. Dude, every time I walk by those and I see, like, you know, Tim Tebow's annual monthly new book, I just think all that Tebow ghostwriting money could have been mine.
It could have been yours.
It was almost mine.
You know who else I've seen on there? I've seen a little Paul David Tripp. On the old Hobby Lobby.
No, not on the Hobby Lobby.
Dude, yeah. No, his million selling, you know, daily devotional book is always there. Like, they have the faux leather version of the Paul David Tripp.
The New Morning Monday.
Yeah.
And they've got one that comes with, like, biscuit recipes,
you know, faux leather, and like, ideas for gifts for, like, your grandmother in 22, you know.
I love
Dude,
it.
If you follow Paul Tripp on like Instagram, he is like an artistic Gaines. Mm. You know, it's sunsets, it's craft bread, it's like everything. There's just
he's an arty dude.
Like an artisan. Well, not only that, but like he's a lover of like beautiful and delicious things, and he loves to make them, and he loves to take pictures of them being made. So yeah, you look at him, you're like, oh, not only does he sell millions of copies of books, the man probably makes the best like bacon wrapped pork tenderloin, you know, with a side of smoked asparagus 100%. Of anybody you've ever met.
Dude, his wife like owns an art gallery too, like in downtown Philly. I mean,
he was 30 years younger, they'd be insufferable hipsters. I mean, he's got the mustache. He's got the look at what I'm doing kind of approach. Like if he was 35, we would hate him.
And in photos, sometimes he looks 35. So it's all good. You know,
it doesn't have the look at what I'm doing vibe as much as the, like, you can tell that he's enjoying it. Like somehow he manages to not posture as much as like, it's almost like an invitation. Like I wish we could all eat this with
me. That's the magical sweet spot of like performative social media life. Like, I think if you look like you're enjoying it and it doesn't look exactly performative, you have a shot at people not hating you. But they probably will hate you anyway. But I don't know. It's a really narrow bullseye. You know what I mean? Like, but when you see it being done well, like I feel like you recognize it.
Baby, that is a great title for our second book. They will hate you anyway.
They'll probably hate you anyway, : Life in 2022. I love it.
Isn't that just like the name of John MacArthur's ministry?
Pretty much.
If there's a book in it, Kyle, if you're listening, and I know you aren't, reach out. Boys, let's do a minute on this other thing. Speaking of writing, this is very helpful.
Transition. Wow.
Yeah, very helpful. Beautiful. Tweet from someone in the academic writing community, which they're always a pleasure to hear from. Piper, you sent this along. I don't know who this person is, and maybe you don't either. Here's the tweet, and we'll discuss it. Academics, : get into a serious writing routine this year. I suggest 4,000 words a day, 300 days. That's 65 days off to revise. Z's a sweetheart for giving you the 65 days.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I feel good for that.
Let's do the math. 300 times.
He didn't give you 65 days off. He gave 65 days to revise, which is the worst part of writing.
Oh, yeah. So let's do the math. We're still in the tweet here. 300 times 4,000 equals 1.2 million words. How many articles? ? 1.2 million divided by 10,000 equals 120. So if you really wanted to, you could put together 120 articles a year, academics.
Wow. Whoa.
And boy, would the reading world benefit from that. You know, I mean, what a joy.
Has the Gospel Coalition hired this guy as their managing editor?
Yeah, that's got to be coming. Meanwhile, teaching quality would just plummet. It would get even worse than it already is if all these academics tried to write 4,000 words a day. So you guys are writers. We just finished a book together, a little flex. How would this work for you? Like, let's start here. Have you ever written 4,000 words a day? Pipe, let's start with you, and then we'll hear from Ronald.
Maybe twice, maybe three times. Yeah. Like, you know, one of those, I have a deadline. I'm probably past my deadline to get a manuscript in, you know, so I have to knock out two chapters in a day or something. Mm-hmm. I should say, I'm sure I've written 4,000 words in a day many times. Half of them usually get deleted. And then there's, you know, 2,000 to 3,000 that stay.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
This is not my method of writing. And I can only do this much if it's one of those miserable days where I spend like 8 or 9 hours writing.
Yeah.
Which I hate. I hate doing that.
Yeah. Baby, what about you? 4,000 words a day. How's it feel?
I mean, dude, I don't know if I've ever done that. I think there was probably a moment where I realized I was late on a seminary paper that needed to be 4,000 words. And I had to crank it out in a day or something like that. But I mean, I probably have about 3 hours of writing in me on any given day. And after that, I'm just kind of done. So unless I'm forced to do it and then the quality is going to suffer. So if it's like a paper, who cares anyway? But if it's like something that you're going to publish, you know, man, that's just it's not going to happen for me.
If it's a paper, who cares anyway?
Exactly.
There's the like pull out quote from Ronnie Martin.
Yeah, D-Man. If it's a paper, who cares anyway? That's the name of my next book.
If it's a paper, who cares anyway is kind of the chorus of academic writing.
Yeah, I think maybe 100% of everybody would agree with that statement. That's
so you two could write 120 papers in a year that no one would care about anyway.
Correct.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's like you said, he said you could put together 120 articles. I'm the more I read this, the more I'm like 95% sure this is satire.
It's gotta be.
Like he's sort of feeding the people who are like, yeah, that's a great idea. We could totally do that. Yeah. They're kind of maniacally off the wall. But yeah, I mean, who reads academic papers anyway? Like I've been to ETS, you know, the Evangelical Theological Society. People don't even go listen to other people's papers half the time.
Yeah.
It's like a guy reading to his TA.
Dude, so, it's wild. Academic writing is kind of like cryptocurrency in that it only matters if you get a whole bunch of people together who agree that it matters. You know what I mean? And like maybe we need Matt Damon to do a propagandish ad for like academic writing.
Can I ask a quick question? Oh. What the heck is Matt Damon wearing in that commercial?
Yeah. I've spent a lot of time thinking about
what this commercial
actually, it's a commercial that you would have seen about 1200 times. If you watched any televised sports, which I know you don't, it's a commercial.
I think it's for like crypto.com.
Oh, okay. No,
it's a propagandish cryptocurrency commercial because crypto only works if like X number of people believe that it's a thing that matters. So it's Damon. He's wearing, so Pipe will do a minute on what he's wearing as we describe it to Ronald. It's kind of used up old Damon. So they haven't done anything with his face to kind of make you think that he's not old. He's wearing a black T-shirt, I think, and like black jeans or black pants. It's very monochromatic on his.
I think they're pleated black dress pants like you would have had to wear for like a high school choir uniform in the late 90s.
Yeah, that's it, Pipe. It looks like a high school choir uniform. Like we're going to be a little fun and playful up top. You know, we're going to let you wear a black T-shirt and then we're going to keep it formal from the waist down. So it's Damon.
Actually,
yeah.
You know what it looks like? You guys were of a youth group era that might have overlapped with this.
Huh?
Where you would do like evangelistic performances of some kind or mimes. Mm-hmm. And so it was like all black, but then you wore like,
yeah,
you know, everybody wore matching hats or something like that. And so it was all, you know, cheesy as all get. He looks like that.
Yeah.
It's like the Christian show choir evangelistic mime guy.
Dude, that's so spot on. It's so 1000% spot on, Pipe. So it's Damon wearing that. And he's walking down this like futuristic corridor, and on either side of him are images of like manned spaceflight for the first time, or like a dude scaling Mount Everest, or like the Wright brothers like learning to fly an airplane for the first time. And then it cuts to Damon basically being like, crypto is the same as this, right? So investing in crypto is on the same level as manned spaceflight. And if you don't do it, you're going to be left behind. And it's the weirdest ad. And it's weird that it's Damon. I want to do a minute on it being Damon, because I think Damon is about to take the like America's de facto secular pastor belt from Tom Hanks, like the older sweetheart actor belt, is about to go to Damon. What do you guys think about that, mm-hmm, especially in light of this ad?
Well, he's getting killed on this ad, by the way. So I'm reading an article from the New York Post, and he's just getting brutalized,
eviscerated. Okay, yeah. Why? Why would like the secular media kill him on this ad?
Because I think they just say it's so cringeworthy. The whole thing is so cringeworthy. Like you basically, how you guys are describing it.
Yeah, yeah, it is. I mean, it's stupid.
And like the lines he's giving are just these, like just ridiculously like cliche. Like then there are others who embraced the moments and commit, you know.
Yeah, right. It's
like, so, it was obviously so a cash grab. They obviously gave him a bunch of crypto to do the ad, right?
So sure,
yeah.
And I don't,
you know,
blame
that's his,
yeah,
that's, well, his agent, I, just like making a bad call and saying, hey, we can make a lot of money on this. But dude, when you have that kind of money, you got to be a little more choosy because you don't need the money anymore, right?
Yeah, so. Yeah.
Oh, but I bet this was his way to be like, I bet he would, you know, he'd been talking to all of his friends, you know, crypto is the mid-level marketing scheme for men. Yeah. per an earlier discussion of ours. And I'm sure, you know, he was sitting around. He's like, man, how do I get in on this thing? You know, he's got a bunch of guys who are like 17 miles deep. And he's like, I don't understand anything you're saying. And then crypto.com reaches out to his agent and we're like, they're like, we'll pay him in crypto.
Yeah.
So it's basically speculative pay. It could be worth negative $1,000. It could be worth $0. It could be worth $17 million in 5 minutes. Who knows? And so he's like, okay, sure. And he's savvy enough to know that this will be something that he can look back on and laugh in 6 months because nobody remembers 6 months ago.
Yeah, that's true.
So yeah, he is Teflon and he probably got paid speculatively in what could be like the biggest payday ever for.
And Damon's kind of like a, like, you know, that thing that he does with, you know, who's the Late Show guy, you know, that kind of that mock feud that he has with Kimmel. Like he's a guy that doesn't mind being the brunt of a joke either. Mm. Like he has kind of thick skin.
It's a good space to inhabit, actually.
Yeah. And so he doesn't take it all too serious, it looks like. And, which has probably helped him a lot, you know, cause he's made some clunky movies. I just saw one last night called The Last Duel.
Oh yeah, that got eviscerated.
Oh, that looked so stupid.
Oh, it was bad, you guys. It was bad, bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. Man, I realize we're just like catching up on the phone now. I feel like I've been on a tremendous like media watching hot streak in that we watched the Lucille Ball movie on Prime, which was phenomenal. Aaron Sorkin wrote it. You guys should both watch it. I would love to do an episode on it, actually.
I saw the first like 30 minutes and then I kind of faded out a little bit, but maybe I'll re-up.
Dude, re-engage. It's incredible. I mean, it has some really interesting.
What's it called?
It's called Being the Ricardos, and it's Nicole Kidman as Lucille Ball, which you wouldn't think would work, but I think it does. And then Javier Bardem plays Desi Arnaz. And it's
boy, you also wouldn't think that would work. I see Javier Bardem and I'm immediately like, what psychotic killing thing is he going to do in this?
Well, I tell you what,
he's felt more Ricky than she did Lucy, though, man. I don't know how you felt about that.
No,
Lucy,
I agree.
Thing was still hard for me, even
I agree.
30 minutes in. But
I really got into it on the level of what we talked about today with the whole like performative marriage thing. Like, what do you do with your marriage when your marriage is also your payday?
Yeah.
And I think it really worked on that level. And it did a really good thing. And this is all Aaron Sorkin just being an amazing screenwriter. And I've seen him do this with other movies where like at some level you're doing a biopic, but you're taking a really small swath. So like one of the big mistakes that biopics usually make is like the movie Ali did this, the Michael Mann Ali film, which I was so excited about. But they tried to tell like 10 years worth of Ali's story and it was too much. They should have just done one fight or one month or one aspect of his life and done it really well. And that's what this one did. The structurally, it was like a week in the life of Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz making their show. And it was really, really good. So I watched that. And then I watched through all of Only Murders in the Building.
Oh, yeah.
Have you guys seen that?
Yeah, I saw that.
About halfway through. I love it so far.
Dude, Martin Short is maybe the most lovable television character ever in that movie. I love him. I really enjoy him in this, and I enjoy the whole thing. So, yeah, that's what I've been watching.
And it's ironic because his character is specifically like unlovable. He's sort of just, you know, so self-centered, but also kind of vulnerable. I don't know. Steve Martin and Martin Short are kind of comedically perfect. Do they make mistakes?
Can we actually do a minute on what you just said? Because there was something fascinating in it. If a person is going to be self-centered, I want to know it right away. You know what I mean? I don't want it couched in like any layer of like faux humility or faux thoughtfulness or whatever. If I'm dealing with a self-centered person, I just want to know it. And then I could probably like that person. Like, if I encountered this Martin Short character in real life, I would for sure like him. But only if he wasn't trying to do some I'm a nice guy thing too. You know, like he's a slime ball and he's a fun slime ball and it works. You know what I mean?
Take note, large church pastors.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess. Yeah.
If you're going to be egotistical and terrible, at least just wear it on your sleeve.
Or just don't be a pastor.
At least have a sense of humor.
Don't be a pastor, I think, is the message there. Like, there are tons of other careers for you. Like, America is as slime ball friendly as it's ever been. Like, there are myriad other jobs that you could have. Just don't be a pastor. That's all. It's easy.
Piece of cake.
Yeah. But I do love Martin Short's character. And
I was really Gomez is the one that shocks me in that, because I just think, like, she's not ever done anything acting wise that's really stood out. And then, like, yeah, somehow she gets cast with, like, Short and Martin, and you go, okay, somehow that really works, and it's the weirdest thing, and it's probably going to be her big breakout into, like, you know, into, you know, new horizons for her in her acting career. But it was just kind of, yeah, like, that was like a weird one for me. And I was like,
I had
wow,
no experiences with her before this. What was she?
I don't think anybody did. Well, she's just, I mean, you know, she's.
Yeah, Pipe, what's she?
She's a musician and like a teen pop star. Okay. So, like, and does, like, I think she's done some, like, acting on, I don't know, Disney or those kinds of, like. Mm-hmm.
And that was a long time ago. Shows, but, like, long time, yeah, ago. Yeah.
Tween shows. But, like, that's the on screen experience people have.
Because she's like 30 now. It's been, yeah. And so it's like, it's been a long time. Yeah. And here she is coming back all kind of raw and, yeah, as a woman and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And it really, it was like, I just wasn't expecting it. And it was like, oh, that's interesting, you know?
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, I like it. I like the whole thing.
Man, she lucked into talk about your acting break, being like, all right, you're going to be in a comedy. You're like, I don't know if I'm comedic. You're like, no, you're the straight man next to two of the funniest people of the last 50 years.
Yeah.
How does that sound? Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. And dude, what's crazy is,
and then we're all going to shine.
I mean, you roll credits. She's an executive producer on the show.
Yeah. I mean, she's like the Steve Kerr on, like, the 90s Bulls, you know, just like stand in the corner.
Exactly what threes, I was thinking.
For you know, 100%. Yeah, she's the one, too, that if you were to rotate her out and replace her with almost anybody else, the show wouldn't change that much. That's not a slam. It's just, you know, it's Steve Martin and Martin Short's show. But yeah, it's a great springboard for her, for sure. All right. Anything else, boys, that you want to talk about?
End on Selena Gomez. I say that's a great, yeah, great end point for us.
It's the Selena Gomez episode.
It is.
42 minutes on Selena Gomez.
It's been a good catch-up, guys. I'm glad we were able to chat through all the things that we've watched and enjoyed or not enjoyed.
Yeah, it's enjoyable. Yeah, we'll do it again in a week, as is our custom. At what point do we start? Probably after we sign the papers, right? Does the big rollout happen where, you know, our
everything
show is
changes,
sponsored?
We reveal our,
yeah,
the big pivot in our,
the big
in
pivot.
Our
show. Look,
I think
Hobby,
yeah,
Hobby?
After we've made an official agreement.
How long till we're doing a crypto commercial on behalf of this?
Hopefully
media
as soon as possible.
Joining. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Black pleated pants, t-shirt up top.
I think if it can happen before we record the last laugh at a T4G22, I think we'll be sitting pretty.
Gosh, it's the end of an era, boys.
It is. We'll talk about that next week.
Oh, the memories, you know. Gosh, we've really gone places with the show.
Oh, man.
Two places, Louisville and a random church in Texas.
And just thinking about our partnership all these years with Dever and Moeller. And,
no, it's been so rich.
Oh, we all those we did Indianapolis.
We did. We did that day spa in Indianapolis.
No, we've
it's actually
TGC.
The funnest one, yeah, to me.
But let's keep it distinct. That's TGC. This is T4G.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, they're so different.
And you know, there'll be LMNOP next year. But
yeah, we'll have to find a new conference circuit to catch onto for our live shows.
Oh, absolutely.
But,
let's target the Sing conference.
What's that?
In Nashville,
there we go.
Because then
there we go.
I don't have to go anywhere.
Yeah.
And
well, that's all that matters.
10,000 people here worshiping the Gettys. I mean, worshiping with the Gettys, my bad.
Dude, that would be great.
That sounds like our crowd, too. That sounds
just a car ride for me.
A lot of crossover.
Yeah, you barely have to leave the house, Pipe. That'd be lovely. And there's lots of great photo opportunities for Ronnie and Melissa in Nashville. I mean, everybody wins on this one. How often do they do that? Like annually?
I think it's annually. The time changes, or the time of year changes because of, I mean, they've had to adjust it due to COVID. So I don't know when it is in 2022, maybe the fall.
Yeah.
So, which is a good time to come to Nashville because it's slightly less than the surface of the sun temps.
Yeah.
So
I like this.
Yeah.
We should We should seriously think about doing that. Do you think we would pull? How similar is our audience to like theirs?
That's kind of what I wonder. I'm not sure that we'd get the same. It's all worship leaders, you know, pastors.
Okay. So, sure,
yeah, it's a worship conference, but
makes sense.
I don't know. I would think we would get more from a T4G or a TGC, but that's just speculative.
But see, here's the thing. We always get people who drive in for shows a few hours, you know, like 2, 3, 4 hours. And like, it's about 2 to 2.5, 3 hours from Nashville to Louisville.
Yeah.
So that would be the top end. But like, we could draw from Birmingham, maybe even people from like Atlanta, you know,
Memphis.
It's a little bit further, but you can get in and
sure.
out.
Sure.
So
I like this.
It's a possibility.
Here's a blisteringly hot take to end on. Are the Gettys the Chip and Joanna Gaines of the worship industry?
Oh
gosh, that's good radio.
Oh, that is really good radio. I would say given that there is nothing exists in that category, they would at least, well, there are other duos though, Pipe, right? There's other like husband and wife like worship duos. So, but the Gettys would be kind of at the top of the food chain.
I would think so.
Yeah, they would be close. The Irish accent is like, if they don't have charm, they have an Irish accent.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like charm.
Yeah, that's immediate built-in charm, even if you don't have it. That's a real advantage in that industry. That's like being tall and wanting to be a basketball player. You know, you're halfway there. Boys, we've done what we always do in this program, in that we've wandered to and fro throughout the gains industry, crypto ads, academic writing, and what we're watching on television. And until next time.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
In a world where relationships are easily broken and often discarded, the Rebuilding Us Marriage podcast is your lighthouse, guiding the way to hope, restoration, and transformation in Christ. I'm your host and marriage coach, Dana Shea. Join me as we discuss the necessary tools for rebuilding marriages from adversity, betrayal, and disconnection. It's time to reignite love as we rebuild marriages from the ground up. Listen to the Rebuilding Us Marriage podcast on lifeaudio.com or wherever you get your podcasts.